Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Nashville's favorite way to wake up. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery, with Mark Howard, Blaine Bishop, and Kevin Ingram.
Wait a minute, that's David Beauclair's music. 104.5 The Zone, 7 o'clock. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Go buy any Tennessee Lottery retailer. Have a little fun with July instant games today. They also sponsor our Visit with David every week. He is, of course, from the Nashville Post. NashvillePost.com is where you can read his excellent work. Before we start our hour with David, let's give away some tickets. We have seats for the Gold Cup at Nissan Stadium tomorrow night. U.S. plays Jamaica in the semifinals of the Gold Cup. So if you're caller 5, you win. 615-737-ZONE. 615-737-ZONE. U.S. men's national team against Jamaica tomorrow night, Nissan Stadium. David, how are you this morning?
I'm good. I don't feel the same buzz for this Gold Cup match that I do, that I felt for... No, seriously, with a lot of the soccer that's come through here, it's sort of like with the whole MLS thing settled, and it's almost like the soccer community has said, okay, we're good. Exhale. Let us know when 2020 gets here. Yeah. Then we're gonna go crazy again. So, but I'm sure it'll be ultimately well attended, as seemingly everything else is in this town these days.
That's right. Might be a work stoppage in the MLS.
Just in time for Nashville's arrival.
Here's Mark with a giant bucket of cold water.
I'm just telling you. I mean, that is a story that is sort of bubbling beneath the surface, that there could be a work stoppage.
That'd be a fine house.
Not kidding.
Yeah, well, it could happen in the NFL and the NHL too, before long.
Major League Baseball. There are a lot of
sort of lining up to have their discussions here again in the next couple of years. So
NFL supposedly could get done faster than any of us expected, which is really shocking almost.
Yeah, there does seem to be less angst in what I've read about the NFL stuff. It's sort of like at least they're going in agreeing on sort of what the issues are. Usually that's half the battle. You know, players have, you know, say these things are issues. Owners say no, these things are issues. They can't even decide what the most pressing issues are. I think in the NFL everybody's pretty clear on that, and NHL too. But I think the differences in what should be done, particularly with the things like the Olympics and whatnot,
the whole escrow
thing, especially. That's gonna be challenging for those sides.
And baseball too. There seems to be a lot of hard feelings on the player side of how things have gone in free agency during the wintertime over the last couple of years. I think that's a big problem for a lot of those dudes, and it'll be kind of interesting to see how that gets
it's certainly counterintuitive to everything that we've seen in free agency in all sports, which, you know, like yesterday in the NHL is a perfect example. There's a frenzy. Things start. You just haven't seen that in baseball the last couple of years, which just, it screams collusion. It really does. And I fully understand why the players have a problem with that.
All right. In the here and now here in Nashville, Matt Duchene is a Nashville Predator. Sounds like each side wanted the other. Duchene loves the Music City. Predators have wanted Duchene for a while, and especially David Poile. And they got it all done yesterday. 7-year deal, $8 million per year. I guess, first of all, just kind of some opening thoughts on that whole situation.
It's been the most predictable offseason in Nashville Predators history, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you looked at this thing, we all said, well, the most obvious thing to do is trade P.K. Subban to free up salary cap money so you can go sign Matt Duchene, and that's exactly what happened. And you know, there's no doubt David Poile was happy. I asked David Poile during the press conference yesterday, I said, did you have a plan B, or was this as committed as you've ever been to going after a single player here on July 1st? And he said, well, of course I had a plan B and a plan C. He said, but I will concede that plan A was up here and plan B and C were way over here. You know, yeah. Like he really did not want to have to go to that. So this is, you know, it's a huge deal. You know, Mark was talking about it last hour, and you know, Paul Kariya is the only one I think you could, in terms of free agency acquisitions, but you know, to your point, Mark, he was later in his career at that point. This is a guy, if you're going to drop free agency dollars, big free agency dollars on somebody, it's a guy like this who was the third overall pick in the draft the year he came out. He's 28 years old. You know, he should be just into his prime, but he's got a ton of experience, over 700 games of NHL experience. He has scored between 55 and 70 points five of the last 6 years. You know, a guy who's a consistent producer. I mean, these are all the things you say if you're ever going to spend big free agency money, this is the kind of guy you do it on.
And, you know, the detractors, and I can give you both sides of the argument. You know, I hear what they're saying. I mean, analytically, he is not a guy who supposedly creates offense. And let's be honest here. Look at his line mates, you know, in Columbus last year. Okay, Cam Atkinson was his right winger. He had 41 goals and 28 assists. His other lineman was Artemi Panarin, who had a great year, who had 28 goals and 87 points. He's got Craig Smith and Mikael Grantland. You know, Grantland had 54 points last year, 16 goals, and Smitty had 21. So not quite what he had in Columbus. But what I'll also say to that is that Duchesne was the first line center in Columbus. He's going to, in all likelihood, be the second line center for Peter Laviolette. That means better matchups for him. He's not always going to face everybody's, you know, shutdown line or shutdown decor. So that could be to his advantage. The other thing that I laugh when they talk about that he hasn't put up great numbers on the power play. Well, have you seen the Predators power play? I mean, he's a godsend compared to what we saw last year. You know, so to me, you know, there are way more positives than negatives with Duchesne coming in here.
He had yesterday the most common sense assessment of the Predators' power play issues. It struck me when he said it yesterday, because I flashed back immediately to Peter Laviolette's rambling and babble there, the day after the season, where he went on for more than 5 minutes about everything they tried on the power plays, and I thought about all the players where, you know, all they said was I don't know, we'll see. I mean, he boiled it down to, he said regardless if I'm on the team or not, the power play would be better this year because they have so much talent. Power play is a contagious thing. When things go really well, it rolls seamlessly and easy. When they're going poorly, it's a snowball effect the other way. To me, it was an Aaron Rodgers RELAX moment, right? You know, like it takes the new guy to show up and sort of calm the waters for everybody in the organization, the fans, everybody, and just say, look, it happened. It's going to be better. That, you know, and statistically, there's no reason to suggest that it's going to happen again, because the power play under Peter Laviolette has been pretty productive every other season. So I thought Matt Duchesne, I thought that was a really underrated but a compelling moment of his conference call yesterday, where, you know, he even said too, he goes, I've already been asked about it a whole bunch. I can only imagine how sick the players are of talking about it. So I think. Whether he produces on it or not, just his attitude and as a guy who is a, you know, is a pretty big name in this league, I think will help sort of settle things in a room that they're pretty worked up. They were certainly worked up about it all last year, and rightfully so. But nobody sort of just said, everybody just needs to get over it. And I thought that was a good moment for him yesterday.
The term of the contract is 7 years. That doesn't surprise any of us. because a guy in Duchesne's position was going to get that. But what about $8 million a year? A lot of us thought it would be more, and you hear that he was willing to take eight to help the Preds out a little bit. Now, the Preds gave back a little bit, or he got a little bit back, because he got a seven-team no-trade list, which a lot of guys don't get. So there was some give and take there, and Duchesne did not seem to bleed David Poile dry by asking, you know, for $9 or $10 million a year.
Well, I'm sure the negotiations included the assertion from David Poile, like, look, this is what we can do. This is the best we can do. And you know, he talked about it yesterday, saying, you know, we tried to give everybody a fair deal. And Matt Duchesne said too, he said this was not an easy decision. He said, it feels like it, he said, because Nashville was sort of always number one on my list. He goes, but it wasn't a clear cut, obvious number one as you go through this process. There were a lot of things.
His boyhood team, his family team was the Montreal Canadiens.
And Montreal made a big push for him.
They made a big push for him. His dad and his grandfather were diehard Canadiens fans. He got the Maurice Richard sweater when he was little. He's kind of grew up that way. So, yeah, there was a pull from there. He had a really positive experience in Columbus.
I was going to say he admitted.
So he definitely had some choices.
Yeah, he talked about. I liked his candor too, in that he said, you know, he said certainly family was a consideration and all those sorts of things, but he said hockey was the number one consideration, and he said look, let's be honest, my family's very important to me. I have a young child. I expect to have more, and you know where I raise them is important. He said, but I'm only playing hockey a short amount of time relative to my entire life. He goes, and I need this to be a really, really big part of this decision. And it was, you don't hear that sort of honesty from guys a lot of time. You know, they'll give you my family's the most important thing. And you come away from the conference call with him, you don't doubt that he's a good family man, whatever he's going to be a good dad, but the fact that he said this was where do I want to play hockey, and apparently his conversations with Peter Laviolette were really important in this process.
Exactly, Laviolette was a huge reason or a huge aspect of this that really won him over.
David Poile said they just had to sit around and wait for him to get done talking last week.
Yeah, Duchesne admitted to that too. Dude. Said it turned into a 45-minute conversation just like that.
Come on, we want to have some dessert here. 712. Yeah, I know. 712 on 104.5 The Zone. This is the Wake Up Zone. We're powered by the Tennessee Lottery. We're visiting with David Beauclair from the Nashville Post. More coming up next here on The Zone. .45 The Zone at 7:18. The Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Go by any Tennessee Lottery retailer. Have some fun with July instant games today. Our friend David Beauclair from the Nashville Post would like to join us, 615-737-1045. What questions you have about anything locally, David has the answers for you. Stop right in there. And on Twitter, at WUZ1045. What else do you think David Poile has up his sleeve as far as potential moves, or do you think this is going to be close to being it for right now?
He was asked yesterday if this is it, and he said, I'm thinking that this is it. He said, I don't want to say definitively it is. He said, because, you know, they're watching. They're sort of hoping somebody falls through the cracks, I guess, and will be willing to accept a cheapy deal to come here if it's the right guy. But like he said, he looks at their organizational depth chart right now, and he said, I see 15 NHL forwards, which is three too many. And, the defense group is obviously pretty well set. Maybe one slot there. The goaltending is set. They're good, really. They just need to get to training camp and get going now.
Do you think they make a deal involving Turris? Can they find a partner there? Do they have to get that done?
No, they don't have to. I mean, they're under the salary cap right now. The question is how happy is Kyle Turris? I mean, he he sort of led on a little bit last season that he wasn't real happy. Certainly his play indicated he was not a guy, you know, things for whom things were going well for whatever reason. You know, I've said it, I still believe it. If he's not your second line center, what does he do for you? You know, he's not one of those guys who's hard to play against because he's a physical player. He's a, you know, I don't know that he can be your third or fourth line center. So,
well, they have no choice. I mean, he's going to be the third or fourth line.
I know, but he's not Nick Bonino. Like, Nick Bonino's a guy who can do those sorts of jobs. I just don't know that Turris, I mean, yes, in terms of the depth chart, that's what he's going to be. But in terms of what those jobs are and what you're looking for, you know, Kyle Turris isn't it. So I don't know. My guess is if you were going to trade him, it would have happened by now. I mean, after yesterday, you know, teams have a lot less cap room than they did. The chances of moving that salary become a lot smaller. So and David Poile sort of talked like, you know, Kyle Turris is a part of this team. It's not just, well, he's on the roster, so he's part of the team. I mean, it sounds like he's part of their plans right now. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Well, but there's also the possibility they trade Bonino, and you know that would be relieving them of $4 million of cap space. And you're right. I mean, Bonino is more of a traditional bottom six forward, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way because he's a penalty killer. I mean, he can do a lot of different things. You're right. But still, the definition now of third line and fourth line is a little bit different in the NHL maybe than it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when you had to be a grinder or, you know, a physical player and all that. But yeah, I think, and plus the fact, I think they liked the Sissons line last year and the way that it worked and with Yarncroke and Austin Watson.
I was going to say, presumably you'll have Austin Watson the whole season, and he had some toughness. And to your point, Mark, this is a really interesting time for the NHL because everything has been all about smaller, faster, quicker, you know, all that sort of stuff. And now and then the Blues put together this behemoth lineup and you know, beat on people and end up winning the Stanley Cup. And it curious to see if they move the needle back a little bit and teams are looking more for that. We're going to be difficult to play against because we're going to rough you up a little bit kind of approach. This season will sort of be a battle for hockey's soul a little bit again in terms of, you know, does the game keep going the way it's going or does it move back a little bit?
Well, but at its heart, isn't it always, when it comes to the playoffs, isn't it always about physicality?
Yes, I
mean, the regular season seems to me like you win with speed in the regular year, but you win with big dudes in the postseason.
I think so. You know, we'll see. There's no question that the size and the toughness. Well, the size has been de-emphasized somewhat. Toughness is still such a valuable trait, especially the way 7-game series play out in the NHL. And you know, certainly the Predators can use a little bit more of that. That's the one thing. You know, Matt Duchene doesn't have a ton of playoff experience for a guy who's been around as long as he had. He had certainly a very good experience last year with Columbus and talked about that a little bit. And I think he's really excited in from a personal standpoint to build on that here. You know, the Predators need to be tougher, and maybe he's a guy who'll help him in that sense.
The other thing that to me is fascinating is, you know, Peter Laviolette doesn't often stand pat. And yes, I know the Jofa line has been a very productive line, but now there could be more intermingling with that second line. You know, you wonder if he's going to, you know, tinker with maybe putting Duchene, you know, between Forsberg and Arvidsson, or, you know, moving, you know, one of those two wingers, you know, down with Duchene and moving, you know, Smitty or Grantland or whoever else. I mean, you never know. Ellie Tolvanen might actually emerge this year.
That's right.
You know, Rem Pitlick, you know, might be up for a little while this year. I mean, who knows? But, you know, those are two other X factors, the young players that the Preds still have in their system.
Well, and Daniel Carr, who signed an NHL contract yesterday. Yeah. You know, this is not one of those, well, he's a two-way contract. I mean, he's on an NHL contract. They're expecting him to be here. Now, he's a 27-year-old forward.
He's Randy Robitaille.
That's a good comparison, who's had productive seasons in the AHL, a very productive season last year, but hasn't produced anywhere near that level in the NHL. So we'll see. I was thinking, I laughed yesterday. You mentioned in the last segment, Mark, about Duchesne's playmaking ability, and David Poile sort of threw that into his comments yesterday too, that he feels like, you know, that he can be a real playmaker if need be. And I just sort of chuckled to myself, because, you know, while we all agree Ryan Johansson has been good for this team, you know, there's no doubt what Ryan Johansson's first, second, and third preferences are, which is to pass and set up things. And I thought when David Poile said that, I'm like, what is so damn wrong with having a center who wants to put the puck in the net all the time? You know, I don't care if Matt Duchesne ever makes a pass, like, let him. And maybe, you know, maybe that would be an interesting change up to put him with Forsberg and Arvidsson and have a guy in the middle who is driving to the net and looking to get the puck in the net all the time, rather than set up his other guys. And yeah, you wonder what, you know, just what that dynamic might look like if they do that. And I'm sure they will do it at times next season.
The other part of it too, Boak, is the Central Division.
You know,
you look at the teams that didn't make it. The Blackhawks add Robin Lehner yesterday to go with Corey Crawford in goal. That's a pretty good duo. Plus, they made multiple, changes, especially to their bottom six. The Minnesota Wild, you know, if they're healthy, and it's been hard, for the most part, for Zach Parise to stay healthy through the course of a season, but they're still a threat. I mean, they have Dubnyk in goal. Suits back on defense. They've still got a decent team, but look at what Dallas did. You know, adding Perry, adding Pavelski. Winnipeg is still good. So Minnesota adds Zuccarello, you know, who's a good player. So, you know, top to bottom, the Central Division by leaps and bounds is the best and the deepest division in the NHL.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, you've got the reigning Stanley Cup champions in St. Louis. You know, Chicago was one of the best teams in the league over the last, what, 5-6 weeks of the season. Darn near made a legitimate push to make the playoffs.
And the Avalanche are better. They're
a team that's building playoff experience and sort of building that hunger the way we've seen Nashville do over the years, you know, before they got to this point. It's a division where if the wrong guy or two gets hurt for you and misses an extended period of time, you're gonna really risk losing ground.
Especially if you're in a spot where you're playing those division games. 728, 104.5 The Zone. This is the Wake Up Zone. We're powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Got our friend David Beauclair in the house from the Nashville Post. NashvillePost.com is where you can read his work. He's brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery as well. Continue with David next, including some analysis of Vanderbilt's championship. More Wake Up Zone right after this. .45 The Zone, 7:34 The Wake Up Zone. Powered by the Tennessee Lottery, they are proud to have raised more than $5 billion for education. Do you have songs that are ruined by movies when they, like, some, they have a song in a movie and good or bad that you don't really want to hear that song? You know, that song right there, Yes, is Owner of a Lonely Heart. Remember it was in one of those Meet the Parents or Meet the Fockers or one of those? And that it just ruined that song for me.
To me, when it was out way back, what, 80-something, yeah. I played it to death. I had the cassette, and it was on the radio a bunch, and I played, like, I ruined that particular song for myself.
You ruined it for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really see it anymore, but you used to be able to buy soundtracks from movies, if you really liked the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were sort of like mixtapes in a way. Yeah. You know, there was a, yeah.
I have to admit, one of my favorite movie soundtracks was There's Something About Mary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, Mary's Prayer is an awesome song. But Jonathan Richman, you know, did a bunch of different songs. And he wasn't a guy, you know, that I knew that well. But he's had great stuff on there.
I had the Vision Quest soundtrack back in the day. Yeah. That was a good one.
Crazy for you.
Everybody had, like, the Rocky soundtrack.
Yeah, to say the least.
My roommate had the Smokey and the Bandit soundtrack on an album.
Is that right? Yeah.
We should do a segment on this. Favorite soundtrack.
Right. Well, the soundtrack to spring over at Vanderbilt has been baseball, and Tim Corbin's team obviously won the championship. It's been almost a week. David's first time I've seen you since all that happened last week, but... You know, kind of in the final analysis of this team, where do you place it as far as historically at Vanderbilt, not just in baseball, but overall, as far as, you know, ranking against all the good teams they've had in any sport?
The one thing, I mean, they're as good as any. I mean, when you talk about winning more games than any SEC baseball team has ever won, you know, I mean, only 12 losses in a long season. It's just a tremendous run, and they won a lot of different ways. You know, they won for, you know, what's really fascinating about this team, and this isn't exactly to your question, but 12 losses on the season, period, right?
Yep.
Kumar Rocker lost 5 times. He has 5 of those losses himself. Like, there's so much attention paid to Kumar Rocker the last month or so, and rightfully so. But this is a kid who was every bit a freshman at the start of the year and struggled. And you know, so many people sort of jump on board midway through the conference season or even come tournament time, you know, don't realize that this kid, you know, just how much he improved during the course of this season. And it leads you to believe that there's more to come for him. Like he's not maxed out at this point. And what you look forward to with this team right now, I think, is almost as much as you're looking back on, because you feel like, golly, 2 more years of Kumar Rocker, and you know, Austin Martin nearly hit, you know, was hitting 400 virtually the whole year, ended up falling below.
I was joking with somebody.
They
just played too many games.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this team's not done, and what you've sort of seen with the. And it happened almost immediately after the game last Wednesday night, is winning one national championship was a big deal. Winning 2 has really changed the narrative for Vanderbilt baseball and for Tim Corbin specifically. Now it's not, oh, you know, he did a nice job and he got it done. Now it's this is a program that is something different. You know, you win 2 in 6 years. You've been to the final 3 times over that span. I mean, people are starting to say, and understandably so, that, yeah, this is, you know, like, and I said it last Thursday, Vanderbilt's never going to be Alabama football. Vanderbilt's never going to be Kentucky basketball. Vanderbilt baseball has a chance to sort of build that sort of reputation now, because it is, you know, It is that good a program, and Tim Corbin is that good a coach, I think.
And I'm happy for Vanderbilt fans. The prestige of college baseball has risen exponentially over the last 10 years. You know, having all the games now on ESPN, I think has really, you know, helped the tournament. And I think it's neat. I mean, it's not just a fringe sport anymore. You know, there were, you look around the league, I mean, South Carolina, you know, had an incredible run of dominance. Georgia's been there. Mississippi State's been there. LSU, of course, has been there.
Florida won a championship.
Auburn, Florida. I mean, you know, that league is so balanced and so tough. And that, to me, makes what, you know, Corbs has done even more impressive. And I think you never know, because, you know, you just see, you know, coaches – you know, have this incredible run of success and then not. But you got to believe in the next 10 years, Corbin's got a championship or two ahead of him. And, you know, you look at the way that he's recruiting, they're bringing in the first or second class, depending on which rankings you're looking at. And it just seems like, you know, this program is set up for success for the long haul.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that the overwhelming impression of pretty much everybody is this is not Vanderbilt's last baseball national championship. And, you know, they had a run there where the draft beat them up pretty good. You look at a guy like Justice Sheffield or Tukey Toussaint and, you know, several pitchers who signed here and then ended up going directly to the pros. Now they seem to have reversed that again. And with Rocker and with Jack Leiter coming in next year, they, you know, they're hanging on to a couple of those guys.
How much do you think it helps when you've got, you know, guys, you know, who are really, you know, trying to make a tough decision and they see Kumar Rocker, they see what Jack Leiter's done. They've seen how Corbin and Scott Brown have taken, you know, good players or good pitchers or whatever and made them even better to up their draft stock. And, you know, they get to experience that program. That, to me, would be a unique selling point above a lot of other programs.
And you know, you look at a guy like Walker Buehler, for example, who, you know, it's not that you leave Vanderbilt and then you're going to spend another 3 or 4 years in the minor leagues. Yeah. You're seeing, you know, Kyle Wright has already pitched for the Braves this year, you know, was on their opening day roster. I mean, these guys, it takes them about a year or so after, after college that boom, you're there, you know, you're there, you're in the major leagues. I think that's a big selling point. And we should point out, you know, Walker Buehler and Mike Minor, you know, all-stars this year. You know, for Mike Minor, that's a, you know, 31 years old to be a first-time All-Star. That's a tremendous thing. It almost doubled the number of Tim Corbin All-Stars now. You know, it had been David Price, Pedro Alvarez, Sonny Gray had all played in the All-Star game, and you know, of the guys who had played for Tim Corbin, now that number is 5 with these two this year. So, and again, probably not the last ones.
7:43, David Beauclair is our guest from the Nashville Post. We'll continue our visit with David in just a moment here on the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery, and they sponsor our visit with David every week. Let's hear from Mark and a word about our friends out of Wilson County Hyundai.
That's right. Payne Bone, the big boss of Wilson County Hyundai, excited, of course, for all the new cars that are coming in, but one thing that doesn't change, and that is their selection, it's selection at its best with every Hyundai. And the savings makes each and every Hyundai a true value buy. If you're shopping sport utilities, well, they'll have you summer ready. The 2019 Santa Fe is their most advanced SUV ever. And with the Tucson and the all-new Kona, well, you can compare them side by side. And also, you can compare the Elantra and Sonata. They're both value at its best. If Hyundai makes it, Wilson County Hyundai has it with America's best 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, and Hyundai Assurance. Wilson County Hyundai's close, right there in Lebanon, just 20 minutes east of the airport, and their family. And they look forward to seeing you in the showroom or shop online at WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Have a great Hyundai Day.
.045 The Zone, 7:49. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. More with our friend David Beauclair from the Nashville Post in a moment. Reminder, coming up in about 15 minutes or less, we're going to have tickets to give away for the Braves and the Washington Nationals on Saturday, July 20th. You can go full blast and top down to SunTrust Park. Be part of 104.5 The Zone night. Braves country, listen up. Going to have those tickets for you coming up shortly. Braves and the Nationals, nasty rivalry.
Braves wrecked my Phillies this year.
Well, they play tonight.
I was going to say that last series they had the because it's one night. What was it? The second game of that series, I flipped to it and Phillies were up 7-3 or 7-2 or something in the. I think that's my computer. That's what it was. Yeah, I heard that too. In like the fifth or sixth inning, I watched for a couple outs. I thought, I'm not in this. Phillies are in control. No big deal. And then before I went to bed, I was on Twitter or something. I see all this unbelievable Braves. Unbelievable. I thought, oh God, what happened? And it took the Phillies about a week to recover from that one. I think.
Yeah, that was a big comeback win. I remember that. I watched that particular game. It looks like they might run off and hide in that division.
They just might, yes.
Bulky, you look around, and this is the time of year where we're going to start seeing the preseason magazines and the prognostications. When it comes to the NFL, the Titans are not a sexy team this year, no. Or regarded as one. But in my opinion, I regard that as a good thing. I think operating under the radar in the NFL at times can be good. I mean, you look at the Browns. You know, everybody's all over the Browns. And there are a few other teams, of course. And a lot of it is just the quarterback situation. The Cardinals are going to get a lot of attention, just because of, Kyler Murray. But as far as where the Titans sit, they're probably going to be picked to finish third in the AFC South. That doesn't mean that's going to happen. But what about the narrative going into training camp and into the preseason?
In some cases, they're picked to finish fourth. I saw a prediction recently that said they were going 3-13. I don't know that they're going 13-3, but I think they're more likely to go 13-3 than they are 3-13. That seems a bit rough. Yeah, I mean the key to the Titans season will be getting off to a good start. You talk about sexy teams. They're going to start at Cleveland, and they can throw a wet blanket over all the Browns hype right out of the gate there. Although Cleveland's been, that every season is different in the NFL, but for some reason it seems like the Browns have been a difficult matchup for the Titans in recent years, and for fans, there's you don't get over that stuff, and it seems like those things happen. So that could be a real turning point if you go up there and win when the Browns are actually a good team or supposed to be a good team and have all this hype. I think you can create some buzz. Then you come home and you play the Colts in week two. Like, if you just start 2-0, which is obviously going to be a tall order, but if you can win those two games against the hottest offseason team and against the quarterback you never beat, it could change everything for this team, I think, going forward.
And Arthur Smith, obviously, the one major change on the coaching staff. But even there, the nomenclature, the verbiage doesn't change as far as the playbook is concerned. And Marcus, and the rest of the guys on offense have the benefit of knowing Arthur before he was a coordinator.
More and more, as the offseason goes on, I am convinced that Matt LaFleur taking the Packers head coach job and Arthur Smith getting promoted is going to be addition by subtraction for this team. I've said it before that Marcus Mariota was at his best when he had a head coach and a coordinator who understood him and did what they could to take pressure off of him in Mike Mularkey and Terry Rubisky. Matt LaFleur came in here and it was, well, this is the offense, we're going to do, almost didn't care who the quarterback was and was hell-bent on putting in that system. And it was only late in the year when that coaching staff figured out, you know what, let's give the ball to Derrick Henry a little bit more and turn him loose that the offense really started rolling. And now you hear things out of Green Bay where, Aaron Rodgers is complaining that he's not going to be able to, change plays at the line and this sort of thing. I don't like that idea that, it's the system, it's not the players. It's always the players first and foremost. And I think Arthur Smith is a guy who has a better understanding of who the players are on this team, what is probably the best way to use them in a scheme and from a week to week basis. I think at some point during the season, we're all going to look back and say that actually worked out really well for the Titans.
Always works out well when we have you here. Thanks, man.
Is that it?
That's all, buddy.
Okay. Everybody have a good week.
You too.
A good,
you got
short holiday week
big
here.
Big plans for the fourth?
I don't. We're talking about maybe bugging out of town for a little short road trip, but it'll be maybe a somewhat spontaneous thing, I think, if we ultimately do it.
This is usually the time of year where you like go to the mountains and stuff, right? I mean,
it has happened. Yeah, we Tammy's had to use some vacation time for some family and some other responsibilities this year, so we don't have a ton. She doesn't have a ton of it at this point, so I'm not adverse to just staying at home and doing nothing for a
sometimes
few days.
Sometimes that's
too.
The best way to
yes,
go, right?
Exactly.
There.
Uh-huh.
Good to see you, man.
All right, everybody, take care.
All right, that's David Beauclair from the Nashville Post. He is brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery, which powers our show, and they're proud to have raised more than $5 billion for education.